What is up, everybody? Today we're celebrating Halloween, and we also are talking about Sex and the City recasting and a lot more. All that on Black Hollywood Lives this week.
You are tuned in to Black Hollywood Live this week.
Now that I know they be jiffing us, I gotta be careful.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Black Hollywood Lives this week. I'm your host, Dario Kristen. Joining me today are Courtney Stewart.
Courtney Stewart, hello.
DJ Jesse J.
What's up?
And we are here today. It's the weekend before, or the week before Halloween.
We feel like, well, it's the weekend for like everybody that's, you know, celebrating the Halloween.
Right, we had this whole debate about celebrating Halloween and the meaning behind it, because I'm a big Halloween person. I can't wait to, you know, celebrate it this weekend, but you feel differently about this, Courtney. Are you not going to any
Halloween
parties?
Well, that was more of Jesse's, like, combating.
Because you said you've never seen Hocus Pocus.
I've never seen Hocus Pocus.
Crazy.
I don't understand how that works.
Like, that's literally the movie of Halloween.
And why is that? I never like corny Halloween movies.
What's corny about it?
I don't know. It just seems like it's campy.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm judging it.
You need to watch Hocus Pocus.
How you gonna call it corny and you ain't even seen it?
Right.
I'm just saying it looks corny. But maybe, okay, fine. I like the Thrasher movies. I like Halloween, Friday the 13th, Freddy Krueger.
I mean, I feel you, but know? I mean, like, some of those are corny, actually.
Jeepers Creepers.
I mean, most of those are corny.
I mean, they get corny after like the sixth ones.
Yeah. Like, oh.
Wait, Anthony, what's she saying?
I gotta say that Hocus Pocus is a Disney Channel original movie, but it is very tasteful, it's not really corny at all, because that's not where they're going with the direction of the film.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you know what?
Popcorn history. It's Bette Midler, damn it. Ain't nothing
go
she
ahead.
Did corny.
Got Anthony from the booth with your history of Hocus Pocus.
I'm glad you knew. I totally didn't know that was a Disney original.
Yeah.
I had no idea. I used to try
VHS it every single time, but I didn't have the Disney channel, so then
I mean,
when
I
the movie would come on, you could only
Disney
watch the first
channel.
10 minutes, and then they change it.
I just assumed
literally,
it was like,
though,
oh.
The other day, our Phil Svitek, who's our AfterBuzz CEO, he had the movie, and I made him turn it off because I wanted to put in Friday the 13th. I thought the Hocus Pocus was going to be corny. So, what do I know?
He'd rather see us just get murdered.
Well. but if you guys do want to party this weekend and you're in the LA area, this Saturday, downtown Los Angeles, I will be spending. It's $20 to get in, and it's open bar.
Where?
All night.
All night.
Where?
Just look at my Instagram. I'm going to post it on there. It's called The Mansion Party, though. Okay. And you know it's going to be lit. $20 and drinks all night. Okay.
And I'll be there hanging out. Say hey.
Yeah, Dario will too. Cost him at all.
I'm going to Game of Thrones. Uh-huh. One of the characters.
Which character?
Look at my Instagram to find out on Saturday morning.
Oh, it's starting early.
It's a whole process.
Wait, are you going Saturday morning in costume somewhere?
No, that's the process. That's when part of it arrives.
Most of it arrives. Wait, so you're going to reveal it before your actual party in it?
Or give like a little piece.
I'm giving you a little piece. It's a slight clue. Okay.
Who's it going to be?
Are you wearing underwear?
Sure.
Okay, just asking.
They're a jock shirt.
I mean, because they used to wear. Like, I mean, I don't really know, because I honestly have only seen one episode of Game of Thrones. So, like, I just assume they were.
See,
like,
I do the same thing every year. I go as Purge. I just put a mask on. All right, Hocus Pocus. Why we had to bring it up is because Sarah Jessica Parker was originally in Hocus Pocus.
Yes, she was.
Well, speaking of her, Kim Cattrall was in an interview, and when they kind of brought up, you know, a little tiff between her and Miss Sarah Jessica Parker from the set of Sex and the City,
because they won't do the third movie. Because everybody's blaming Kim Cattrall.
Mm. Well, she said, you know, I played that character. I rode it till the wheels fell off. And honey, the wheels have fallen off and I'm not riding it no more. But she made a comment where she feels that they should recast her character and make it a woman of color, whether Hispanic or black. The audience stood up. They thought that was a great idea. I kind of laughed at it a little bit, like, girl, you gonna make the whole one be a cop.
See, that's what I thought about initially when I saw it. And I know she didn't mean it that way, but I said...
But Courtney had a good rebuttal.
Out of all the characters that you picked to be a woman of color is got to be the one who is sexually, you know.
Why can't it Carrie be?
Arguably, Samantha's character is arguably the most free and honest character on the show in terms of her sexuality and owns her sexuality more than any of the other women.
Agreed.
So it is a power position, and a powerful woman of color would be amazing. But at the same time, we have all kinds of other information and connotation that goes along with a black woman or a woman of color being that sexual. So I get why initially that reaction is, but at the same time, if you really look at the character of Samantha, that it her base is in power, not in powerlessness and using her sex to get anywhere. She controls her sex fully, so it might be kind of dope.
She controls her sex fully.
I mean, I can get with that. It's just, not, first of all, this was just hypothetically speaking. They're doing.
They're definitely not going to do that. Okay. And I don't think, even though like it seemed like decent reaction from it, I don't think really audiences. And I mean, I love a brown girl in anything, but I don't want to see that.
No.
It's
except
not Samantha.
You're just going to use the same cast, if you were to cast and then be like, hey, Samantha.
No.
Right.
No.
Girl.
Samantha, what did you do?
If they was trying to do like a revamp.
She's like, what's that girl's name?
Like, girl, you've been tan and all.
Another girl in the girl in the UK. Rachel. Rachel Dolezal.
Right, no, the best would be if they did do another movie and they just never
Mentioned it.
That, if she just comes in as a black girl.
It's an Aunt Viv.
That would be the best. Yeah. I actually would appreciate that more.
But then that would be what the movie is about. The comedy that is a mess. True. Because otherwise it wouldn't be. But
and
whatever.
Then the whole franchise would just get flushed.
They just
right
need to put it to bed.
I agree.
I wanted a third movie, but just put it to bed.
Well, speaking of beds and personal things, honey, I have loved me some Amazon Prime. As a matter of fact, they came and took my box spring that I thought was for a California king bed, but apparently I have an Eastern king bed.
What's an Eastern king?
Yeah, what's the
Eastern
difference?
King size?
I didn't even know that.
Thank you. Didn't know that either. So I was ordering on Amazon Prime. I was getting a California king size box spring because the bed's fucking huge. So the box spring comes. First of all, setting up a box spring.
It's not fun.
At all.
No, did you do it by yourself?
I sure the fuck did.
Oh, I don't know how the hell you did that.
I don't understand what you mean, set it, like it was folded?
No, like
it was,
like no, it's you a have bunch to, of metal pieces.
Yeah, metal pieces, you
got to
put it together. Yeah, I've done it. It's not fun.
Right. So,
and I had one person with me and it
I had to
fun.
Do it twice because I ordered two of them and we had to return both of them. So then, all of a sudden, my boyfriend wanted to say, oh, well, what do you mean? This is an Eastern king-size bed. Bitch, I am from the East Coast. I ain't never heard of an Eastern king-size bed. But apparently, Eastern king-size are wider instead of longer. And I was like, that's why the bed's so dope. But it's really hard to find a box spring mattress for that. So, anyways, I'm saying all that to say, Amazon Prime's really dope because they came, picked the shit up, and was...
Did you have to break it down and, like, get it back in the box?
That was actually more annoying than anything. But that's fine because they came, they picked it up, delivered it back for free, gave me my credit real quick, and I was like, thank you for my coin. But now Amazon Prime has this new thing that they want to try with keyless entry. So basically what they're going to do is start setting up this program where you purchase, I think it's for like $249. $249, you get this kit. What it comes with...
How about did you just...
He's like,
complimented yourself just now.
He's like, I knew my information.
I knew my number.
Okay.
Sorry, I was at Walmart earlier and paying bills. All right, so... You get an Amazon security camera, a cloud cam, and a compatible smart lock. So basically what it does is it allows the delivery guy, if you aren't home, to unlock your door so he can bring all of your stuff inside of your house. And then when that happens, you get a little warning on your phone. You can turn the app on and you can see from the camera that the delivery man is coming into your house and make sure you know he ain't doing nothing crazy. All this is stemming from, this is going to actually start at the beginning of November and it'll be available in 37 U.S. cities. But last month, Walmart actually announced that they were doing a testing service and they'll basically allow the deliverer to go into the house and also into your refrigerator. Like, they will come bring your groceries and then...
because all of the grocery delivery services.
Now, look, Amazon, I love you. I love your two-hour delivery window service. I love your two-day free shipping service. But do not come into my house. Like, that's crazy.
I feel like it's just setting things up for some major lawsuits down the line.
Like, how
I mean, even if you're paying for it, just something ends up missing... You know, something ends up broken, whatever it may be, you get robbed 3 days
like, what
after
if I
they
can't,
delivered
yeah, what
something,
if I can't
they might
look
blame
at my
you,
camera.
You know what I mean? Just, I don't know. It just seems like that could get a little complicated. All I gotta
say is technology fails too, y'all. That's not like a real bad plan. It's not like a real bad plan. And for all y'all delivery drivers that ride for Amazon, I would tell my boss if I was a person of color, I'm sorry, I don't do the home deliveries with the key, because you could be delivering something, putting it in their refrigerator, and somebody think that you in their house and they done pulled out a gun and shot you.
I had turkey meat in here.
No. Get a new. I would go back to being a UPS.
Yeah. Okay.
I agree. It would be nothing I'd want to qualify for.
No.
I'm good.
All right. So I'm sorry, Amazon. That's a no for me. Yeah. I'll pay $250 actually a month if when you say you're gonna deliver it at a certain
time,
you actually show up at that
time.
I would pay $250 for that, because I don't have time to be waiting all day. It might be delivered by 8 p.m. Well, when?
Right.
So I got to be in the house all day?
Right.
Yes. Because if I don't, you're gonna take my package back and I got to wait a whole nother day. I need my Febreze.
Yeah. I'm with that.
They should. I guess that's another stop, and you don't want to have to make another stop.
No.
I'd rather have like a concierge that takes my boxes that are easily accessible in my neighborhood, and I can just go to my, and they're open like 24/7, and then I can just like sort of like how the post
like
office
the
is like
store
right there,
or even like, yeah, I was gonna say like a Ralph's, you know what I mean? Yeah. They have their little office there, and you can go pick up your package at your closest location. Yeah.
That's smart, Amazon. Look at that.
I would like that.
Money.
See, you're about to get paid for
I
that.
I need you to be in the house.
Money.
No residuals.
To be in the house. But speaking of people that are about to get paid, Issa Rae's back in the news this week, you guys, because she's got another show that's coming to HBO, and she is the executive producer, and it is a family drama that is going to be set in Los Angeles in the early 1990s, and it will center around an African-American family dealing with the events of that time. She will be working with, the writer of the show will be Angela Flournoy, who is a National Book Award finalist, and she wrote The Turner House, and Angela will also be executive producing. And it's basically a show about bridging the later Reagan era and the early Clinton years, and the drama will center on the marriage of Cheryl and Jackson, with Cheryl being an envelope bonds pushing real estate agent, and her husband Jackson is a conflicted LAPD anti-gang task force recruit, and they have two teenage kids, Ebony and Les, daughter and son, and it's just going to follow their family at a very interesting time in Los Angeles. And for those of y'all that don't remember what was going on in LA in the early 90s, check it out, and it's going to be fun. They had all kinds of wild shit happen in out here.
Yeah.
Okay? We had Rodney. We had OJ. We had the crack cocaine epidemic was going on in the city, like, and all kinds of major gang situations in various neighborhoods around the city. So
it'll be interesting to see it through her eyes. Like,
me too.
Her storytelling.
Yeah, I think so too. And it also, it's always interesting to see how other deals get made, especially with HBO, because it seems like when you have a successful run on HBO, you are open to them looking at you for many projects.
Sure.
You know, and HBO is one, I'll congratulate them. That's one of the places that I do hear a lot about multiple projects from people coming out versus just, you know, one project here or there. They really go in on their talent.
They want to sign you for the deal if you succeed, and then
keep on succeeding.
So, and it's cute too, because like they have the same, I think Issa and Angela have the same management company, and so like how those relationships match up, and Issa loved her book and was like so excited to be like, yeah, I get to work with her as a writer. That's going to be amazing. So congratulations, black women doing big things. We love executive producers, and you know, so I'm excited to see it, and I can't wait to watch it, because we don't get a lot of family dramas with the brown folks.
That's right, and there's a lot of black women writers who are getting deals. There's another one I just read about. I think she wrote for Saturday Night Live or one of those. She's a black woman, late night TV writing. I can't think of the name right now, but she just got a new deal, a pretty big TV deal as well. So there's a lot of.
I'm not sure if we're talking about the same person, but what's her name? I think Diana. I know her Instagram handle. Like, I can't remember her actual name. Diarone is her Instagram handle, but she was working with How to Get Away with Murder, Juvie Productions. How to Get Away with Murder. No, How to Get Away with Murder lead. The actress.
Viola
Davis. Why was her name not coming out? But she has a production company, and she had supported D'Aroni, I'm sorry, I don't, Diana, I can't remember your whole name, on the ABC internet platform to do a short like series, which was really funny. I forget what it's called, but it's about basically like a company that helps people deal with being racist, like, and doing racist weird shit. So it's a comedy, and it was really funny. And it's, like, 10-minute web series. And now she has to deal with Amazon for her new show, which will be out, I think, early next year.
That might be her. That might be what I read. But it's exciting to see all this new content for African-Americans and people of color that's going to be coming out. And it's all going to kind of manifest in the next year or so.
Cool. Amen. And it's a lot of women, so we love that, too. All right, speaking of women, we've got a professor over at the University of Pennsylvania. Well, she's actually a teaching assistant, a PhD candidate right now. And she's TA in her class. You know, she's got this class called Sinners, Sex, and Slaves, Race and Sex in Early America. Made me miss college because all those, like, wild classes that you take in college. I was like, that's so great. Anyway.
Wow, that was a really conservative school. Sinners, Sex, and Slaves?
Sinners, Sex, and Slaves, Race and Sex in Early America. So, obviously, in early America,
there was a lot of sinners, slaves. Sex, and slaves.
That's what was happening.
That's a pretty accurate title.
I know. It's like America to 1975.
Right.
Anyway, so her name's Stephanie McKellop. She's a PhD student, obviously, and she's TAing this class. And she tweeted, apparently, on her personal Twitter account and said, quote, "I will always call on my black women students first. Other people of color get second-tier priority. White women come next. And if I have to, white men." So her post immediately drew some criticism and some anger and, you know, people like, why are you discriminating against the white folks? That's not right. This is not fair. Blah, 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 blah. And they basically, they're people complaining, and they complained to the school saying this is supporting discrimination of white people and it's unacceptable. Well, University of Pennsylvania has released a statement, and the statement came from the dean of the School of the Arts and Sciences, and he said, quote, "We are looking into the current matter involving a graduate student teaching assistant to ensure that our students were not subjected to discriminatory practices in the classroom and to ensure that all of our students feel heard and equally engaged." So they're looking into it, but she is still currently teaching. But there were also some supporters of this tactic that she's using, which, by the way, McKellop said she learned this practice from one of her former professors in undergrad who used the method to redress a lack of opportunities for non-whites to speak up in normal life. So she was sort of trying to almost socially experiment in the classroom is essentially what was happening. And there were other supporters that thought her tactic was refreshing and pointed out that the method is used to create a more inclusive learning environment and community by highlighting the thoughts and ideas of the most marginalized students in the room first. And UPenn is obviously a majority white institution. So it's an interesting thought. Are you offended? Would you be mad if your kid was in the class and was white and was like, I don't get called on until last?
I think that I don't agree with what she's doing. I think in order for people to learn and to move forward with things, you have to hear everybody's voice, whether you agree with it or not. So to segment a group to speak the majority of time and have others just listen, yes, everybody needs to hear everyone's story, but I think in order for us to conversations need to happen in order for you to learn and to expand. So I would say diversify it a little bit more as far as like who you let speak. I think it should be something where the black students in the class, you hear what the white students have to say, Asian, whatever, whoever it may be, they should all hear this equally, be able to express themselves.
I feel like it's the wording that she used.
Yeah.
Like, and if I have to. Like, yeah, you have to, girl, yeah. you're a teacher.
You're a professor.
You have to. These are students who are paying a lot of money
to learn
and to ask questions and to speak in class. I think that what she's doing, I'm not going to disagree. I think it's kind of dope, actually. But I think it's one of those dope things that you do silently. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then the kids in the class understand, like, wow, she's really cool. Like, she gives people a voice. Let them speak that. Let them say, you know what? I really love her because I feel like she gives women of color a chance to actually speak. In other classes I go to, I don't really get picked on. But in this class, I do. You going on Twitter is like, I don't know. It just kind of seems like you have a thing against white men.
Yeah.
Like, personally, girl, like, maybe something happened in your past. I don't know. But I'm just like, if I have to, like, girl, what you delegating? You a teaching assistant.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, but I think it is, it's a seesaw thing. Like, I think it is dope because I do think, you know, I think the idea of her saying by doing it in class, it gives an empowerment to do it outside of class, to speak up and to do that. So, but I just don't
Do you
I don't
not,
like the tweet.
Do you not
want
to hear the voice of Courtney.
I don't think it's that she was saying, like, not. Okay, so, because my first impression was, like, I read the tweet, and I'm like, girl, come on, you can't say that. Like, especially because she said, and if I have to, I'll call on the white boys.
Right.
But then when I continued to read, I read what the class title was. In reading the class title, I started to shift. Because if you're talking about race and sexual politics and that kind of thing in early America, and if you're at a predominantly white institution, which I went to one of those, and if it's, a educational higher learning, whatever, the super intelligent kids in these classes, like, you probably have, I don't know, I mean, unless it's hundreds of students, but, like, in terms of percentages, you probably have, what, 3% of people of color in your class to begin with. So I think that once I read what the class was and what she was trying to, I don't agree with the tweet, and if her attitude is really like, if I got to, which she might have just had a bad day at work and was like, because the white girl.
Like, before you even got to the white girl,
before
you got to the white girl thing, just stop at
that. But it was a tweet. But I think the point still remains is that she, to get those 3% voices heard, specifically in this class, is probably imperative in a way that in a math class it perhaps is not. So I just thought when I read that maybe that goal is even higher just because of the nature of the information that is being taught and learned in that class. And those voices are even more important. And in college, even though you're adults, like, people aren't always speaking up, especially in uncomfortable situations. And it's difficult when you are the 2%er in a class about a sensitive ass subject like that.
And having the white man talk.
And having the white man. And there's a level of patriarchy and power that goes in, and that plays just like we see in it play out in businesses right now with sexual harassment issues and things like that. Like, there's that level that still exists in the classroom. So I think from a theoretical spot, I think she's going in a healthy direction. I just think that obviously the way she said that is not okay.
You should go teach it because you just put it in better
you
words.
You did, actually. It's so funny that you said it. I was just thinking, I was like, Courtney, you should be a professor.
So everybody's voices are important.
She's calling, Courtney.
Whatever. But, I don't think anybody was, I don't think she's trying to not allow them to speak, but I think what she's actually saying is that the white male voice is heard and is heard often. We also really need to hear this part of it too. Right. And that's why I'm having to, and the only way we're going to do that is to actively do things to make that the case.
Sure.
Not to just be like, well, it'll happen whenever. No, we actively have to do something to shift that whatever. So hopefully that's where she was
coming
from.
That's the conversation, girl.
I hope that's where we come
from. To become from an assistant to a teacher, that's the conversation.
I just want to make sure all voices are equal.
She's a PhD candidate. Sometimes real, real smart people, they don't always get it out right.
She had
theoretically, she had something great going on, but then when she wrote it on that tweet, and when you only got like 22, what is it, 22 characters?
Honey, then that's when you had to delete. You should have left the white women and the white men out of the tweet and made it real beautiful. Like, I love choosing my women of color to have a conversation. You know what I'm saying?
I had a hard time tweeting about the World Series in 22 characters yesterday.
I thought they were adding to our characters. I thought we were going to get at least 50 more.
I don't even understand it because I can't be fine when somebody asks me a question on it. I'm like, well, where's the rest of it? Like, the update? I can't.
Don't try and post a link. I always struggle with posting a link. It takes like 51 of my characters out when I do the links.
We just need in-person conversation, guys.
We do.
Let's hang out. Let's chat more.
All right.
Anyway.
I'm
pretty sure we're supposed to leave in like
2 minutes. We're supposed to leave in like 5 minutes. All right. So we're going to move on to our EUR Web Story Spotlight of the Week.
Spotlight of the Week.
Well, on the show in the past, we've talked about Flying While Black. Well, the NAACP is taking it to the next level because the news this week, they reported that black people should be cautious about flying on American Airlines specifically. Now, they are encouraging people to stay away from them if they're traveling. And the reason why is because they felt like there's been plenty of cases that have recently been reported of disrespect and using discrimination towards blacks from American Airlines that's been reported and come up in the news. So the warning has come after 4 recent times when black passengers were said to have been heavily discriminated against. This is what the new NAACP president had to say about it. All travelers must be guaranteed the right to travel without fear of threat, violence, or harm. The growing list of incidents suggesting racial bias reflects an unacceptable corporate culture and involves behavior that cannot be dismissed as normal or random. So these are a couple of the cases that have come up as of recent with just the filing of discrimination towards black people. A passenger was removed from a flight after exchanging words with 2 white people, white passengers specifically. One passenger had a first-class ticket but was moved back to the back of the plane while her white friend was permitted to stay up front. What else happened here? An activist was removed from a plane after questioning why her seat assignment had been changed. And then also a spokeswoman for an African-American organization said the company was the company had discriminated against her as well as she was trying to get seated on the plane. Now, American Airlines made a statement. They said that they were disappointed to, you know, learn of these offensive situations.
They say on Twitter when I be tweeting them.
And they are looking into the situation, which they always do. What do you guys feel about that, the NAACP putting American Airlines on blast? I mean, because, you know, we all have been on planes, and
I needed to get my money back.
But sometimes I feel like it's a big debate. I don't know if I'm being discriminated against or if this is just disgruntled as airline workers.
Well, if it's Spirit, sometimes it's in between. Then you can't complain about nothing because they just disgruntled. Like, I can't even get on a phone call with Spirit. It would ruin my spirit.
Spirit only goes five places anyway. So.
No, they go. Actually, you'd be real surprised. They go places that other places don't. No, you'd be like, shit, I got to take Spirit.
They've added to their
list.
Never
again.
But you got to pay for every single little thing.
Never again.
And I can't stand American Airlines either. You charge all that money for them dusty gray ripped up seats looking like a bus, school bus. But the thing is, I think it's actually really dope that NAACP is doing this because I think it lights a fire. Because I think that with the airlines, they get so comfortable.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to say
like how they still charging us some baggage fees when it was made because gas prices went up. But suddenly when gas prices went down, y'all didn't get rid of no baggage fees. Right.
Like, not to say that there isn't racial profiling in the airport. Oh, but I think, but I do also think like with some of like the seat changes and stuff like that, like that happens a lot. To a lot of people. And at the end of the day, I think that that's just messed up on the airlines because they overbook, they double book, and like it's a freaking hot mess. So I think it's dope that NAACP is doing this because it is going to cause American Airlines to actually sit and have to filter through some stuff. And hopefully there will be some changes made. And if American Airlines steps up to the plate, it will kind of force down the hands of other airlines to step it up. Because what I've noticed is these airlines, they get so comfortable with the name of who they are. And it's like, when's the last time you checked this plane? Because I flew 20 years ago and it's the same one. And the TV still don't work.
They
lie. I mean, yeah, they're...
That's why they still fly.
A lot of times they buy older models and just refurbish them too, you know, which is, I mean, I guess that's cost effective, but it's kind of scary too. I mean, you know, like I said, it's a catch 22 because, yes, do I think that there's probably been times I've been racially discriminated against or black people obviously have been racially discriminated against? But in the latest, I just feel sometimes almost too that in the news, you know, we see a lot of different people who are discriminated against at airlines. And I just feel like a lot of times it's just nasty people who work at airlines. Not all. I'm not blaming all airlines. I've had great experiences at some airlines. But there are a lot of times, I mean, I've gone on a plane and seen people just walking in the aisles and just, they just walk in and the flight attendants are rude to them.
There's also really nice people that work at
airlines. There are nice people. I will say that I don't think it's really about necessarily the people of the airlines, but I think the airline industry has become a... they have definitely sacrificed customer care and customer service for profit margins in a huge way. Mm-hmm. Like, and obviously everybody does that. It's America, it's capitalism. You make more money, you do what you can, cut corners, wherever. But I feel like they've taken it to the extreme and the excuse, like with the gas thing back, it's now been 10 years since gas prices went crazy and they started doing like baggage fees
point.
And that kind of
thing. I didn't think about that, but you're right.
So I feel like that was sort of like a shift and they just sort of made it all about money. And I feel like they treat their employees that way too. So their employees are just pent up, anxious, and anxiety ridden because they trying to do what upstairs is making. So they're a part of that whole machine, and it's not necessarily their fault that shit is shitty. Right. And shit is shitty because those freaking whatever, the shareholders want a bigger paycheck, and they're trying to monopolize it as much. And I mean, obviously, we only have five major airlines
in
the country.
At this point,
that's a difficult industry to sort of break up and make it more competitive so that the service to the people is much better. So I feel like that's more of the issue. And they just get back to when we had some tablecloths and y'all was like being sweet and being like, would you like a beverage and not trying to charge me for some fucking peanuts?
Right. For $12 for peanuts, by the way. All right, so we're going to move on because we have to wrap up soon.
I was like, I ain't never paid $12 for peanuts.
Yeah, peanuts are
no,
free.
I mean, but they're, you know, but when they, you do the little peanut boxes bad, and yeah. everything, like, I'm talking about that mix.
Oh,
you
know what I mean? I don't even look
with
at that
chips
page.
and peanuts.
I'm a JetBlue.
It's like $12.
Me too.
Primarily. So.
I will only fly JetBlue. I really will only fly JetBlue.
I like Delta because you get the one-on-one individual screen. I like that because I can get my cable.
So does JetBlue.
Yeah, JetBlue too.
But JetBlue doesn't fly to my hometown.
No, when Delta had Delta Song, I was all about the Delta
Song. I'm all about
song.
Virgin.
They did
too.
That really well.
I like Virgin.
Virgin's a party.
I will never fly with
Virgin
ever
Overseas.
Again.
Is
oh, Virgin Overseas is bomb. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. All right,
never been
so we got to move on. Sorry. All right, so the last story of the day, which we'll wrap up with, is this. I found this quite
it's
interesting.
So sweet.
Two moms in Westtown, Chicago, have created Stand Up to Hate. It's a play date in the neighborhood. It's actually taking place today.
Yeah.
Actually, probably already took place, or it's taking place right now. So basically, what happened was these two white women who have a black nanny, and they received a letter in the mail from an unidentified person who said some pretty nasty things about the black nanny and the choice of them having a black nanny. So they received this letter, and this is what it said. It's amusing that the moms are trying to rebel against the greatest leader this country has ever seen. Honestly, you need to fire your nanny because otherwise it looks like she is your modern-day mammy. Please take heed to the advice being shared in this letter. Find a new nanny. We do not want an infestation in our community. All right, so these two ladies got this, right? So they got the letter. Once again, whoever wrote the letter is a punk because if you're writing this letter, how come you can't, you know...
Come tell me to my face.
Why can't you say it to your face? So the person put the letter in one of the women's, whose name is Heather DeJonker's mailbox and, you know, left it anonymously. As I mentioned, she took it to the police. Now, the nanny in the case, her name is Farrah Pickett. She was initially going to quit, but then she decided that she wanted to... This was her... moment to help children, teach them a little bit more about race relations, and she wanted to help them make a difference in the future of the future of the children. And then she also wanted to show them that she's a strong black woman. So that's what's going on right now. But these two women have this whole block party play date. You don't have to have a kid, they said. You know, they just want to like really embrace culture and bring a community together. What do you guys think about this?
I love that they put, I don't know if they, it was like a post they put out on Facebook or they put it around the neighborhood where they were like, we don't want you to think for a second we accept this kind of bullshit in our neighborhood. I mean, that's not what they said exactly, but that was
the Courtney translation.
That was the spirit of what they were going for. I was like, oh, I love that they put the ad around there. Like, they spread it around the neighborhood. Like, whoever did this, you shady mofo, we don't want your kind in our neighborhood because we love everybody. So I appreciated that they went and did all that and got the kids playing with each other. And I hope it's, you know, some chocolate kids, some caramel kids, and some other kids. Maybe they can bust some kids in there to show some kids to talk to other kids or something. I don't know.
Oh, I love the ad. They had a little black kid, white kid, Asian kid, all holding hands with the back, the boy, girl. You know, we shall overcome moment.
Yes, honey,
you know?
That's the only way we gonna overcome.
We shall overcome.
That's
you know?
It.
All right. If you're in Chicago and you can stop by, I mean, I think it's probably still, well, maybe late now. It's 8 o'clock.
So
it's probably, it might still
the
be
kids
a little
need to go to bed.
Well, ain't no play day now.
I mean, those,
they're going to bed.
Those are
the play day's
school
over.
Age kids. They're at home. And it's
school
dark
tomorrow.
And it's dark.
In
it is
Chicago.
Dark.
It's
dark.
Almost 9 o'clock.
It is, you know. But
my
you
elementary
know.
Bedtime was 9 o'clock. What time did I
elementary?
Was?
Elementary?
Oh, please.
Oh, no,
9 o'clock was when I was in 9th grade. 10 o'clock, 10th grade, 11. Like, my mother was crazy.
Oh, yeah, no. I had to be in the bed by 7:30 during the week.
In elementary?
Yeah. And sleep probably by 8:30.
I was always 9.
I don't know.
And then all when right. I got older, it just, I think I just
look,
went
now
to sleep
I go
all
to bed.
The time.
Now I want to go to bed at 8:30,
girl,
but I don't.
Right, it's 6 o'clock. I'm ready.
Like,
right.
Ready now.
All right, we're going to wrap up now. Where can fans find you, Courtney, with your D.A.R.E. t-shirt on?
You like my D.A.R.E. t-shirt?
I do.
My
took me back to high school.
Yeah, okay. Wasn't that elementary? I don't know.
It might have been.
I'm
yeah.
sorry. Whatever.
One of those.
They tried to make a comeback. They tried to make a comeback.
We did in high school, too, because...
They did try to make a comeback.
I didn't do it
D.A.R.E.
in high
tried
school.
To make a
yeah,
comeback.
Yeah, they tried to make a comeback, because I remember they tried to scare us into driving. Like, you could get into the car accident if you were drinking and stuff. They tried to do that.
I don't know. I had moved with the other kids in New York at that point.
Okay.
That's when I was in my cultural upstanding life. Anyway, moving on, I can be found somewhere on Twitter and Instagram at Stuart Starlet.
But apparently don't tweet her, because she don't know how to find you.
I know I can find you. I just can't. The replies, like, it doesn't fan out like it used to. Like, when you're having a conversation, they don't do it the same. Whatever.
Hit me up everywhere, DJ Jesse J.
You can hit me up at Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all that fun stuff on Broken Famous on the Reels channel. And also, you can look at my Instagram Saturday to find out what Game of Thrones character I'm going to be for my Halloween party. I'm going to give little clues throughout the day. All right, everybody have a great weekend and happy Halloween if you celebrate it. Peace.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us, info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagramming, at KingXOP.
Hi, family member.
Thanks for tuning in.
This cousin. Hollywood, redefined.
The views expressed here are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.